8:04. Lots of stuff going on in this final hour. Matt Barrels will join us in moments. Time to help fund scholarships for U.S. veterans. Donate to the Help a Hero program at a Sports Clips near you. Want to remind you, join Nate. Why do I do this? It sounds weird.
I don't know.
Weird.
I got it right here in front of me.
Join Nate Goodyear.
You want me to do it?
Then it sounds kind of presumptuous if you do it, doesn't it? Like, join me. But then again, I do that all the time. Yeah. Yeah, you do that.
Okay. Join me.
Join him.
For the grand opening of Moe's Southwest Grill. From 3 to 5 p.m.
Big deal.
Be there for 2 whole hours. You can see my freshly shaven face on the corner of Sunrise and Madison. Actually, that's where Moe's is. That's not where I'm going to be specifically. I'll be inside of Moe's from 3 to 5 p.m. Get free chips and salsa, $5 burritos all day long, all made from 20-plus fresh ingredients like all-natural chicken, grass-fed steak, and organic tofu. Create one-of-a-kind meals. Plus, you'll have a chance to win tickets to Monster Energy's After Shock Festival. That's this weekend, David.
That's a lot of fun, exciting stuff going on
right
there.
3 to 5 p.m. at Moe's.
Speaking of scary Monster Energy Aftershock Festival, we've got not just one, but two pair of tickets to give away towards the end of the program. Stay tuned. To purr. Yeah. That's how I say it. It's a little bit of a Sacramento accent. Hey, speaking of Katie, it's a good segue. I was told, loyal listener Scott O'Hara tagged me on Facebook yesterday. Because I had mentioned a couple days ago, despite the fact that we may fight like cats and dogs sometimes, that if there was a Katie Christensen fan club, that I would be the president. Well, apparently, there is now a Katie Christensen fan club forming on Facebook. That is freaking fantastic.
And they want approval of my game opener attire.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Somebody, you know, they're fans of yours, they make a fan club, and now all of a sudden they want wardrobe yays and nays. Yep. Although I agree.
Nope.
I think you should.
You know what? Well, I'm thinking, actually, because I get so much crap about wearing purple dresses, which I did the other day. And I had a nice little purple dress picked out for the home opener. But I'm thinking because the boys are going to be in tuxes.
Yeah.
That I might need to wear this like kind of fancy gold dress that I have.
With an evening gown.
No.
No, I think the gold dress, the golden one center.
No.
Formal.
Nope.
God, it's weird that I just don't feel like you should be the one that's telling me what to wear.
Yes, no, absolutely. Listen.
Well, good. I'm going with the gold.
Hey. Yeah, you know what? You should, because you know what? The Kings and gold has always worked out in the past. Also, they don't have any rivals that, you know, wear anything.
No,
that's,
it's not.
Just throwing this out there. Black and purple hasn't worked for them real well in the past.
Well, I mean,
either,
you know,
so
that's,
neither did the red, white, and blue.
Don't fight it. Just wear the purple. You can't go wrong. Just wear the purple.
Not the boss.
I'm not.
I fully support the fact that you're a grown adult woman.
No, she's not.
I bet whatever you wear is going to look stunning.
She's a little baby.
Thank you, Nathan.
Just wear the. Why don't you put it out for a. Hey, you know what? Don't listen to me.
No.
Why don't you put it out for a Twitter poll?
I will.
Why don't you poll it out?
Seriously?
Yes.
You're going to take that bait?
Yes.
No, I won't do the Twitter poll. I think I'll actually just put a picture of each dress and be like,
do it.
What's the one?
Absolutely. I will support whatever the public decides. That when they're picking between purple and gold. Now let me ask.
I feel like you've just given in.
No, she's allowing.
Story of my life,
man. She's going to phone a friend all of a sudden, but to phone a lot of friends. Now let me ask you this: if the poll says whichever dress it says, will you abide by the poll?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Maybe that'll be my blog this week.
Okay.
On KCK.
Here's what you missed in the first 2 hours. For all that and more, KHTK.com, where I will have a new blog up today where I talk about a number of things, Ty Lawson, the Oakland Raiders, and a few others, a bunch of random notes there. Check it out, KHTK.com. Matt Barrows coming up. This was a bad idea because the text line is beginning to unite, and the filth and cesspool that is our text line, they have some suggestions as to what you should wear on opening night.
How did you not see this coming?
No.
You know what, Nate? I'm going to admit it. I didn't, and I'm stupid. I should have completely seen this coming. I didn't, so don't blame.
So it's not between a gold and a purple dress, is it?
No.
Oh. Well, that's not happening.
Right.
I'm not the, you know, ringside girl at the
Well,
boxing
apparently
match.
Some people have different views.
Oh.
That's just unfortunate and not acceptable.
You know what's fortunate?
What? Oh, here we go. Segue. What is
Matt
it?
Matt Barrows.
That's a girl. There you go. That's keeping me on track right there. Matt Barrows. SackB.com, probably also not going to be in a purple dress on opening night, the Golden One Center for the Kings versus Spurs. But then again, Matt Barrows, you never know. He's an eclectic type of dude. What's going on, buddy?
Yeah, ringside girl to Matt Barrows. The perfect the perfect segue. Hey, pay me enough money, I'll do it.
Hey, wow.
There it
See?
Is.
I smell a GoFundMe in our future.
I think there might be some beers thrown at me by disappointed male fans.
Hey, we were talking about this earlier in the week. I don't know how much light you can shed on this, but Lisa, I believe it's Lisa DiBartolo York, who is, of course, related to Niners owner Jed, was shown, I don't want to say caught, because I don't think she did this accidentally, was shown retweeting some pretty rough articles on Jed, and that kind of brought back to the surface the question of, well, how does the York family feel about Jed's business acumen, or at least running the Niners? I guess I'd never really paid much attention to the family factions for a while, that apparently not everybody's on the same page.
Well, it's not the York family. It's the Bartolo family.
There you go.
And I think that the distinction is important because, you know what happened 20 years ago now. It's that Denise took over the team from Eddie after he got in trouble in Louisiana. And there's been resentment ever since. I mean, there's no two ways about it. I think Eddie D and his family, try to get along as best as they can. But, I mean, they see where this organization's been taken. And, Eddie D has said things in the past. I mean, he's not a fan of John York at all. I think he's got a better relationship with Jed. But, I mean, how can you be a DiBartolo from that side of the family tree, Eddie D's side, and see what's happened to the organization and not be upset by where it's gone? I mean, there's no way that Eddie DiBartolo would have had this team with all that salary cap space this year and not spent, hardly any amount of it, which is what the 49ers have done. So my point is that what the York side has done with the team is totally anathema to what DiBartolo's mentality was when he was running it.
I mean, in all reality, though, Matt, as excited as a 49ers fan might want to be, this is much ado about nothing, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think Jed York could have put it any more plainly than when he was asked in January, I mean, do you have any intention of selling the team? No, this will be in our family, forever. I'm paraphrasing, but he was quite clear that there's no intention of selling, no intention of doing anything. So, it's not like governor of California. You can't recall the owner of a sports franchise.
Yeah.
You're stuck with this guy unless there's some sort of economic apparatus that forces him to sell it. And, that's up to the fans. And, the way that the 49ers have structured the stadium, you're locked in for a long time if you bought tickets back in 2014.
Well, and Matt, regardless of what's going on, it really comes down to it. You're going to be scrutinized as an owner if the product on the field is not good. And it has not been good for the 49ers. And one of the things that always happens when this is going on is somebody else is going to make it better, right? Well, Colin Kaepernick, people were calling for him to start for a couple weeks now over Blaine Gabbert. That's happened. He's been named the starter for week two. What did you see from him in week one that would maybe give 49ers fans a little bit of hope moving forward?
Well, he was aggressive with the ball, which is something that Blaine Gabbert wasn't. He wasn't always accurate with that aggression. He had Torrey Smith open for a deep touchdown early in the game, I think, on that first drive, and missed him by a few yards. But the point being, at least he's going for that, and that's getting Torrey Smith involved is a big deal. It opens up other areas of the offense, so I think that's a positive. And the first half went well for him. I mean, they were in the game in the first half, as they've been in several games. The second half, though, was a totally different story, and Kaepernick was not accurate, and his final statistics were a lot like Blaine Gabbert's, and even worse in some areas, such as completion percentage. He only completed 45% of his passes. So, there were some good, some bad, and that's been sort of the storyline of the season for this offense. It's just not consistent. It's particularly bad in the third quarter. They don't stay in games, and they give the ball over to the opposing offense, and that opposing offense runs roughshod over the defense. I mean, if you had to measure up the two, though, I think you'd have to put the defense as the worst unit through six games so far for the 49ers.
And, Matt, I was going to kind of ask you, you know, some of the familiar knocks on Chip Kelly teams. You could look at the Niners box score on Sunday and see some of those correlations. The 21 points given up in the fourth quarter and terrible third down conversion percentages on offense. Do you think in this case that those numbers go together, or, you know, is the defense just bad? It's not a matter of them having too many snaps.
Well, they have had too many snaps. I think they're leading the league in snaps. Now, whether individual players are exhausted or not, I'm not sure. There's been enough injuries and kind of substitutions where no one player has seen an overabundance. But, you know, throughout the course of a game, that does add up. I think it's more, you know, that this team just doesn't know how to play the run. It's just not consistent in that regard, more so at this point in the season than it is just sort of wear and tear and exhaustion. I think that would come into play certainly in December. And if this team ever did make the playoffs, I think that would be a big deal as well. I mean, how far can you expect a team to go in January and February when they played so many snaps? It's something that I think that Chip Kelly is conscious of. He hasn't acknowledged it per se, but you know, the offense isn't running as quickly as it can and as it did certainly at Oregon when he was at New Hampshire, even the last 3 years in Philadelphia. They're purposely slowing it down. He says in order to make sure that they've got the right play call and that they're not getting into negative situations, so that third down percentage is better. But I'm sure, you know, one of the ancillary things that they're worried about is, you know, how often the defense is on the field and, you know, getting them maximum rest. But even with slowing down the offense, purposely slowing it down, the defense still played 79 snaps on Sunday. That's a lot of snaps. You know, what you want to see is you'd love to see it in the 50s. Average is about 65. 79 is above average, and most of these games for this defense so far have been above average.
Well, and we know, as Matt Barrows of the Bee joins us on KHTK, this team's lack of depth is well documented. Of course, Navarro Bowman's out, but Michael Wilhoit has been consistently graded as the worst middle linebacker in the league, according to Pro Football Focus. Is there some sort of solution there, someone that they're maybe trying to get reps?
Yeah, well, it's Gerald Hodges who started the first three games and then mysteriously has hardly played since then. I think the mystery is that, you know, you'll recall from that third game, which was the blowout loss to Seattle, there were complaints from the coaching staff that the 49ers were misaligned early in the game, and that led to some big runs by Kristen Michaels. So, I mean, it's not difficult to put two and two together and conclude that it was Gerald Hodges who was out of position. You know, he's the most athletic. He's the fastest guy. I mean, the team speed of that defense when Belor and Wilhoit are out there is terrible. I mean, you saw it on that third and 20 run by LeSean McCoy. Getting Hodges out there helps that. He's just not reliable. So, you know, it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't scenario for the coaching staff at this point. You know, their job is to get somebody like Gerald Hodges up to speed to make sure that he's not out of position. So in that way, the coaching staff has failed. I think you're going to see a lot more of Gerald Hodges. He'll probably start for Will Hoyt on Sunday against Tampa Bay. And it'll probably be Hodges and Belor at inside linebacker. But, I mean, what is that, the fourth composition of inside linebackers that you've seen this season? That's not a good sign. You know, that's just one of myriad position groups that need to be addressed in the offseason. Even with all the draft picks that Trent Baalke likes to accumulate, there's no way that they can address every position group that needs addressing. I mean, it's baffling to see how many picks he has per season And yet, how many gaps the 49ers end up having in terms of personnel, it just doesn't add up.
Matt Barras of the Bee joining us. You can read him at sackbee.com. Is it even logical to have a Trent Baalke clock countdown, or are you under the assumption that if anything does happen with Baalke, it's going to be after the season's over?
It probably will be, given some national reports. If it does happen, it would be after the season. It is logical, though, if you've decided that you are going to move on from your general manager, there are reasons to bring in a new guy at midseason. That new guy primarily would get to become familiar with his existing personnel. He can watch them more closely. He can meet with them. He can kind of figure out what types of guys they are, et cetera, et cetera. Number two, you go through the whole bowl season, which is important for kind of figuring out your draft lists and your draft board and all that stuff. You would be on board with your staff at that point, which is basically the first of the last steps before the draft, and it also sends a signal to your fan base that you're not satisfied with what's going on. And frankly, I don't think that signal's been sent by the 49ers. I think they said 2 years ago that the stopwatch on Trent Baalke has started, that they're going to hold him accountable, but it hasn't seemed that way to this point. So there are arguments for and against doing it at midseason, but there are some arguments for changing horses midstream, so to speak.
Matt, one of the bright spots, I guess, if you want to put it that way, for the 49ers offense has been Carlos Hyde, but he injured his shoulder in the third quarter against the Bills. Played a few more plays, but then missed the fourth quarter. He's seen posted with a sling, his arm in a sling. Looks like he'll miss this week and not play until after the bye week against the Saints. What does that do for their offense with him missing?
Well, we saw it all last year. I mean, they were an okay offense when Carlos Hyde was in the game last year, and then they struggled in the running game when he wasn't. I think Chandrone did an admirable job of coming in midseason and being the backup. Mike Davis was terrible as a rookie last year. Up until that last game, he was on pace to finish the season with a less than 1 yard per carry average, which is basically unheard of in the NFL. And lo and behold, it's the same two guys who are his backups this year.
Right.
It's one of, like I said a little earlier, it's one of several positions that wasn't addressed in the offseason, despite it being a glaring need last year. So, what you can expect is what you saw a year ago. I think that the offensive line is a little bit better, but neither of those guys is a dynamic runner, not nearly to the degree that Carlos Hyde is. So, I don't see how you can expect very much or anything that's very different from a year ago when you haven't changed anything from a year ago.
Mm-hmm. Matt, how did Josh Garnett play in his first start?
I think it was spotty. I think they brought him in to improve the running game, especially the inside running game, which is his forte. And you saw that critical third down or third quarter series where they had third and one and then fourth and one, and they failed to pick up a yard. I don't think Josh Garnett is specifically to blame for that, but it just goes to show that they're not getting that push on those inside runs that they think they should. He had a holding penalty. He gave up a sack late. But he also did some nice things. So, it's an up and down mixed bag for Joshua Garnett. He benefits from the experience and the snaps, and obviously we're looking toward the future at this point with this team. So it's probably good that as he's getting in and getting meaningful snaps at the midpoint of the season here.
Turn on my mic. That's Matt Barras, sackbee.com. You can read all his 49ers coverage, the best in the land, right there. Again, at sackbee.com. We'll talk to you next Thursday. Always appreciate your time, Matt.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right,
thank you, Matt.
We'll take a break, come back. We'll deal with the Kings and all these trade rumors and what Woj said with Yahoo and the Ringer and all that yesterday. We'll talk about that next on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHCK. Atta babe, little Phil Collins. It's 8:31. Time for some Phil Collins and time to help fund scholarships for U.S. veterans. Donate to the Help a Hero program at a Sports Clips near you. Hey, Aftershock, it's this weekend. It's coming. 11 a.m. starts. The doors open Saturday and Sunday. Discovery Park, Tool Slayer, Avenged Sevenfold, Korn, Disturbed, Primus, and more. Tickets on sale now. More info at AftershockConcert.com. And guess what? We got not one but two pair of tickets to give to you in just a few minutes. So stand by. Adrian Wojnarowski has reported that the Kings still remain engaged with the Minnesota Timberwolves on trying to get Ricky Rubio from them. Also, we heard the other rumor this week that it's a little more discounted, I think, in my opinion, about Goran Dragic. Not, did I get it right? I looked at you. That's not your fault now. You've been trying to hold off, and I appreciate
Dragic.
That. Dragic. Telling you, though.
You're 50% there.
That's right.
I know.
And and then also rumors or Woj reports that they had talked to Oklahoma City, the Kings had, about Rudy Gay for Cameron Payne, their point guard, but Payne broke his foot in September, so that's kind of done. There's a debate on Twitter. In fact, I just threw something out there yesterday when this first broke about Ricky Rubio and Goran Dragic, and there's a lot of people that would rather have Dragic on the team. And I know I'm a stubborn pig head, but I'm having trouble understanding that argument. And I have yet to have somebody present a cogent argument to me about that that doesn't involve, well, you know, Dragic just looks better. Now, granted, there's absolutely no doubt that Goran Dragic is a better shooter than Ricky Rubio. Ricky Rubio is a poor shooter. He's a poor shooter. And that's undeniable. But I think when you look a little bit deeper at both of them and their numbers, first off, the last 3 years, Ricky Rubio has actually played more games than Goran Dragic. Rubio, what did he play? 72 games last year, just last year alone. Dragic did. Rubio did 76. Okay, so that's number one. When you look at their shooting percentages, Dragic is 10% better than Rubio. That's a big deal. But Rubio is slightly better when it comes from three-point shooting, which is a little bit weird.
It is.
And then, across the board, he's better than Goran Dragic. He's a better free throw shooter by 12%. He out-rebounds him by a half a board a game. He's got three more assists per game, 8.6 to 5.8. Double the steals, 2-1 to 1-0. Less turnovers. And then, of course, you got 14 points a game versus 10. Now, I know stats don't tell the whole story, and one of the things those don't tell is that Ricky Rubio is a far superior defender than Goran Dragic.
Oh, that's without a doubt.
By the way, he's 5 years younger, and he's on a much cheaper contract. So help me out. Let's just assume you guys are choosing between the two. Please try to convince me that Dragic should be a better get. I don't understand.
Well, I can't do that.
Okay.
I'll say this. Goran Dragic has not been the same player as he was since he left Phoenix.
100% correct.
And I think that a lot of that comes down to the system that he's playing in. And if Miami is wanting to put him on the trade block, and they just signed him to, what did I say yesterday, a 4 or 5 year $55 million deal or something like that.
Yeah, he's got a lot of money left.
Yeah, there's a lot of money left on that. I think the best place for him is probably going back and playing under Alvin Gentry, because it was Alvin Gentry that turned him into the NBA player that he was. That was so. Did he make it to the All-Star game that year?
No, but he did average 20 a game.
Yeah. He just barely missed the All-Star game.
Seven assists the year before.
Yeah, and I mean, that's kind of something to look at too, because as much as I think there's a lot of validity to what you're saying, Katie, when you look across his career stats, I mean, is it so crazy to look at a guy who had his three best years came at age 26, age 27, and then at age 28?
Yeah.
Or, I mean, that's a three-year window where you hit your peak right there. You have one really great year. I mean, the fact is this guy's 30 years old. Yeah. He's probably deteriorating. His best years are behind him regardless of what system he's in. I'm taking the young guy.
Well, and if you look at the situation in New Orleans, this is why, to me, this could maybe be a possibility. I know Alvin really well. I would not for 1 second put it past him to really be pursuing Goran Dragic, because they've got Drew Holiday as a point guard. We all know that he's likely to miss the entire season dealing with his wife's illness. You've got Norris Cole. I mean, Quinn Cook. I'm looking at their roster right now, and I'm trying to find a point guard. Tim Frazier. They've got like four on there, and really
Big
none
Tim.
Of them are that type of player that they need to put alongside Anthony Davis, who is hopefully going to be healthy for them this year. So to me, that seems like a better fit because I think he just fits into Alvin Gentry's system better.
I don't think getting Goran Dragic is as hard as people think. I think Goran Dragic can be had pretty much for anything because, as you explained, Nate, so well, Goran Dragic is 30 years old. Goran Dragic is making $16 million this year, $17 million next year, $18 million the following year, and then a player option. I'm just going to go ahead and assume he's going to exercise that player option by the time he's 34, 35 years old for $19 million. Comparatively, Ricky Rubio is signed this year, $13 million. 14 next year, 14.8, and that's the final year of his deal. All 3 years guaranteed, no options there. And here's what I think a lot of people honestly forget about Ricky Rubio. He's 25.
Yeah.
He's 25 years old. He's been in the league forever, and we knew about him in Europe before that. He's still a kid. Mm-hmm. He's still got, when that contract is up, he's 28, 29 years old.
He's still got his biggest payday ahead of him, provided he has any degree of health there. I mean, yeah, Goran Dragic has a very average, I guess, career type of path.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't take a Statnik projection master to see the way that's gone, and that's typical for a lot of guys to hit their peak at that time, have 3 years that are the best of their, with one of them that's their absolute top season, and then slowly their numbers go down. That's where Goran Dragic is, and if you look at where that peak started at the age of 26, again, Ricky Rubio's not there yet.
And this is what drives me crazy from the 916, and actually, this is what I put into the Twitter thing, and this is what I started the segment with. From the 916, the eye test says it's Dragic. Rubio is a broke Rondo who's prone to injury. Again, I have yet to hear somebody make an argument that doesn't involve, it just doesn't seem that. Here's the thing. Ricky Rubio plays in Minnesota, and people don't watch Ricky Rubio. People, they don't put it together.
I can't argue with you on
Dragic
that.
Dragic has played in less games in 3 years. Rubio shot better from three last year. He beats Dragic in every statistical category except for shooting percentage and 4 points a game, and he's 5 billion times the defender that Dragic is. So please get out of here. Well, it doesn't pass the eye test. I was going on with Marty McNeil. Marty McNeil is one of the most respected basketball minds in my life. He has forgotten more about basketball, was a beat writer for the Sacramento Kings for the B forever, and he and I go out on Twitter about this all the time when it comes to Rubio. And Marty's thing is to say, well, you know, he doesn't pass the eye test. Well, what does that mean, doesn't pass the eye test? I'm not a stat head, okay? And I understand that stats do not tell the whole story. But when a guy is clearly better in almost every aspect of the game than other guy, and he's 5 years younger, and he's tens of millions of dollars cheaper, and by the way, again, 3 year sample here, but I think that's fair, he's more durable than the other guy, then what the hell is this eye test garbage? Eye test means I don't really have anything to back up what I'm saying, but this is what I think. And we live in a world where we can't say, wow, that's a great point. You know what? I hadn't really done my research on him. And that bothers me. Come on. Trying to make the team better, and Ricky Rubio is not the answer to the world here. But I think he'd be the best point guard on the team.
Well, and stylistically, what exactly do you want? I mean, is Goran Dragic anything better than what Beno Udrich was at the prime of his career? Because I think Beno is consistently one of the more underrated players. At his peak, he was very good.
Probably
for a
right
bad
there.
Kings team. And that's what I see a lot of out of Goran Dragic. Per 36 minutes, you get about 15 points, 6.5 assists. That's what you're going to get. Ricky Rubio is going to give you 10 dimes in 36 minutes.
By the
I'd
way,
rather have that.
And capable of crazy stuff. What was it? It was a couple years ago. He was, I want to say it was 2 points and two, it was 1 point and two assists away. It was 1 point and two assists. It was 1 point and two assists away from quadruple double. It was 1 point, two assists, and might have been one steal too. But he put up some crazy levels, like 9 points, nine assists, 12 boards, nine steals, something crazy. And granted, that's not, you know, what he's going to average, but the kid's capable quite a bit. Don, you're on the drive.
Yeah, I was just wondering, what are you guys arguing about these lower end free agents or lower edge? Lower end trade. These guys are no good.
We got to argue about something.
Don, who do you? Because LeBron James isn't available, and neither is Steph Curry.
Well, I'll tell you, nobody's available in any of the tiers for Sacramento. It's always bottom tier guys that are playing out their string on their careers and stuff.
Unless you
if they can get a good year going so they can get on to another decent team.
You're trading DeMarcus Cousins, the Kings don't really have a ton of tradable assets, which is why you kind of have to look at these guys.
Well, get rid of DeMarcus. What's he ever won, you know? Come on. He's been in the league 6 years. He's never won anything. Jeez.
Why
don't you get some pieces?
That's the argument.
Some pieces and get some good pieces for him, you know?
Or what if you get some pieces
done a really good deal with the Celtics, you know? They really wanted DeMarcus. God, you probably could have got Jared Solinger, Avery Bradley, and probably Chris Dunn, and next year's second round, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's an oversimplification, and it's an argument that's made all of the time to say, well, what has DeMarcus ever won? This team hasn't been winning. I don't know that I can blame that on DeMarcus Cousins. I can blame it on the six different coaches that have been here in 6 years. I mean, there's really been no stability. There's been nobody around him. So as good as he is, and he is one of those players that comes around very rarely in the NBA, especially now in terms of big men, because they just don't exist like him anymore. And no, they haven't won anything, but they haven't done a lot to really help him in the process. You can't argue that.
Well, you know what? He's the same kind of guy. He's a million-dollar game with a 10-cent brain, okay? He can't get along with the players. He can't get along with the coaches. He can't get along with the league. He has trouble with everybody. So why is he going to be a leader to take us anywhere?
He got along with Mike Malone. He gets along with Dave Yeager. Why are we blaming the 27-11 guy?
It's interesting, though, to me, because of all the news coming out right now with Draymond Green and Mo Spates talking about things. So there's guys like this on every team. It doesn't mean you can't win with them.
We'll hit up the Raiders relocation next. The Drive Continues final segment, Sports 1140 KHDK. All right, 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. We'll take the 11th and 12th callers.
Way to mix it up there a little bit.
All right, fine. We'll take the 12th and 13th. I already said it. Got to stick with it. We'll do 11th. We'll do whatever numbers you want tomorrow. You pick them. Make it hard on Matt. Take the 90th and 91st callers. But today we'll do 11th and 12th, 339-1140. You're going to get yourself each a pair of Monster Aftershock tickets for this weekend. Discovery Park Saturday, Sunday. Rock out with your socks out. Tool, Slayer, Avenged Sevenfold, Korn, and more. Purchase tickets, aftershockconcert.com. All right, what do we have here for you towards the end? We already talked a little bit about...
Oh, I thought we were going to talk about Game 5 of the WNBA Finals.
Okay, honest to God, though. Don't tell me. So that's it. Are you joking or is that going on right now? Is it going or is
tonight.
It over? Hold on. It's the Sparks in the in Minnesota, right?
Yeah. What gave it away? The fact that it's on the TV in front of you?
Oh no, honestly, I was looking right at you the whole time. I didn't know. I honestly wasn't looking at the TV. I swear to Christ, I wasn't.
I wouldn't have been able to tell if I was looking at the TV.
No. Who's going to win, Katie? Who do you think?
I actually think Minnesota is going to win.
Yeah, why?
Well, because they were able to go into L.A., and this is a tough thing to do. They went into L.A. They avoided elimination. Minnesota takes it back home. Minnesota has been one of the best teams in the league.
Who's
for the last
better during
years.
The regular season?
Minnesota, I think. Yeah. I don't know with 100% certainty.
All right. Well,
who are the stars? Who are we watching? Give us some names we've heard. Candace Parker,
Candace Parker.
She plays for...
Maya Moore. Candace Parker plays for the Sparks. Okay. Maya Moore plays for the Lynx. Those are the two primary ones. But then, what is it? Nneka Ogumike from Stanford?
Yes.
Okay.
She's, I want to say, did she get the MVP this year for the Sparks?
Oh, she might have.
Yeah.
I don't know that, because I would have to see the name in writing, but I remember reading that she was quite effective this season.
I think she did, yeah.
I can't handle the WNBA until the Monarchs come back. The Monarchs are here. I'm into it. I'm into it.
I understand.
You know, Sacramento kind of thing. But, I mean, you know, we'll find out tonight. And then congratulations to whoever wins. And, build a dynasty. Mark Davis and the Oakland Raiders may soon very well be Mark Davis and the Las Vegas Raiders. Here's Mark on Oakland. So that's Mark's opinion
Zero. You did nothing for me.
Yeah, take you back to Radio Row last year at the Super Bowl. Out late, me and a friend of mine that no longer is able to be mentioned or something. Anyway, just kidding. Anyway, out late, get back to the lobby of the hotel. There's Mark Davis sitting there with Reggie McKenzie and a bunch of gorgeous women that were like half my age. And we said to Mark,
that
hey,
makes
dude,
him what, 15?
Yeah, no, I mean, you think I'm joking?
Oh.
and we say to him, hey, Mark, man, I mean, because you got to, right there, it's Mark Davis. He's wearing a white suit. You got to meet the guy, right?
Right?
Hey, Mark, listen, man, we work for Raiders flagship station, and hey, just right on, you know, we know it's a tough decision, but we support whatever you do. And he looks at us and he goes, just win, baby.
Nice.
And this was a Super Bowl, right?
Yes. Yeah, and yeah. That was when I was like, this team is not staying in Oakland. They're gone.
Here's Mark.
It was so classic, though. I was like, yes.
He's awesome.
Mark,
good for you,
because
Mark.
Because that's the thing. It's like you can say all of the things you want. Like, hey, it's terrible. It's a tragedy. And Mark Davis is screwing over Oakland. Whatever you want to say.
Just win, baby.
And then, right. And then you meet the dude, and you're like, you're right, Mark. Just win.
Did he then, like, toss his bowl cut to, like, he tossed his head, and the cut kind of went. Here's Mark.
Just spun around.
It looked like a carousel. Little horses hanging off of it. Here's Mark Davis on Las Vegas. Okay, I just heard this, and I've never really noticed this before, and maybe I'm just a little twisted. Listen to this again. Does he not have a little bit of the Joe Maloof to him? Just a little bit? Here, listen to him. A little more bass in the voice.
I hear it. There are two things that are missing,
yeah.
And that's a lot more heavy breathing,
yes.
And a lot of you knows. But other than that, it's spot on.
Somebody texted in our last segment that we did on the Raiders and said, guys, not telling the whole story, and you're obviously biased.
I don't understand bias.
I don't
but
either.
Okay.
What part of the story are we missing?
Let's peel back the curtain here, okay? Two things. Number one, as all of us who were, you know what's deep in the whole King situation, the idea of a city, especially the stepchild in the Bay Area that Oakland is, losing their team is not a good thing. And we know a lot of Raiders fans that would not be happy about this. That's number one. None of us on this show want to see the Raiders leave. And number two, by the way, the
we
station
freaking cover the team.
The station carries the Raiders. They help us. So from a business standpoint, no, we do not want to see the Raiders leave, personally and business-wise. There is no if there's any bias, it's to them staying. If you want rah-rah coverage, okay, cool. There's a lot of podcasts and stuff out there that are wearing some blinders, and I totally get that, and I appreciate that. Listen to that. The bottom line is train hasn't left the station, but the engine's going, the steam's up, and you now have
almost everybody's on board.
Yes, yes, yes. I don't want to say it's a formality at this point, but it's damn near a formality at this point. The only question now is the NFL owner votes.
Mark Davis is saying it.
Mark Davis is saying it. So you know what? Still got a couple more years, and you still definitely have this year as well for that team to do well and be enjoyed. All right, tomorrow is Friday. In case you didn't know, we finish out the program. Chris Landry, amongst others, will join us as we head into the weekend. Thanks so much, Kevin Sheraton, Matt George behind the glass, the freshly chauvin Nate Goodyear, Katie Christensen, and our thermostat battle will continue off air, I'm sure, on Twitter. I'm Carmichael Dave. Enjoy the rest of your broadcast day. Jim Rome next on Sports 1140 KHTK.